You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580. It is time, yes, maybe you don't recognize by the music, but it is time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design on this Thursday, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Well, it is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On August 17th, Thursday, the 23rd of 2000.
The 23rd of 2000.
I thought, as I said that, how am I going to say that anyway? You know, sometimes you just dive right in and you get lost in the ethereal.
You get too far and ethereal. You can't pull it back.
Well, no, I can't pull
right.
it back now.
2320.
Yeah, yeah. Where were we? Thank you. Thank you. 8-17-2023 of 2023. 23 years into this century. I mean, really, can you believe it?
Really?
Remember, we're already into August.
What was it, Y2K? Remember that?
I do.
Oh, yeah,
indeed.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I saw a meme the other day. It said, when somebody says, think back 20 years, I automatically think, oh, 1980, that was a good decade. They're like, no, that was 2000.
Yeah. Next chapter, years. Turn the page, right? Turn the page. And joining us today is the Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. I can't believe we're already halfway through August. It's just like, wait, it's going too fast.
The best summer ever. The best summer ever. Like it seems as though everyone tends to agree.
Only rainy day that I can remember is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was some lightning out there, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, I almost took a picture. It was so dynamic here this morning about 6 a.m. or so, watching out east. Bam. Yeah. Nice. Heidi is our own RICP and Managing Director. Thank you, Heidi. Yes. Joining us, too, is Deanne Jennings, our Director of Operations.
Good morning, everyone. So Hello. Good to be here.
Great to have you. She'll be informing us with some interesting stats, I think, given what we're talking about today. A couple of weeks ago, we had a call from, we had a caller call in regarding Ray Dalio, who's written some great stuff. He is also the president of Bridgewater Associates, the world's biggest hedge fund. So he has a lot of research at his hands, and he is a very bright gentleman. Today we're going to be sharing some facts from him, weighing in on the economy, among others. Heidi's going to be talking about Generation X and Social Security, and of course, as we mentioned, Deanne with the stats. So diving right in from this article by Spencer Yacob, I guess that's how you pronounce his last name, from the Wall Street Journal, August 12th. Washington has laid the seeds of a crisis that Wall Street can no longer ignore. Now, whenever we share this sort of thing, precautionary, if you will, or a precaution, please don't always take this sort of information, of course, with a grain of salt. We are all adults in the audience, are we not? Given that reality, some of this is going to tend to sound quite negative. So I'm trying to moderate some of the negativity by asking you to please remember that the world is not falling apart tomorrow. We're not saying that.
We could play a Beach Boys song right after this to balance it out.
Yeah, that'd be excellent.
Uplift the spirits.
Good idea.
Yeah. But given that reality, there's some relatively negative information out there, which we think is important to share. So here, let's dive in. The Congressional Budget Office, federal government, regularly updates its long-term budget forecasts and says that the U.S. debt held by the public will surpass gross domestic product. Anybody know what gross domestic product is? Class?
The value of all produced goods and services.
Within our economy, yes. This fiscal year, this year, and that interest on that debt will equal about three-quarters of discretionary non-defense spending.
Wow.
By 2031, eight years out.
By 2031, okay.
It will be as large as Medicare, Social Security, and, of course, interest that are legally non-negotiable. It'll be 100%. It'll be 100% of the previous non-discretionary non-defense spending as mentioned. Sorry. Medicare, Social Security, and, of course, interest are legally non-negotiable. That was the next sentence for those who are trying to follow me here. Sorry about that. Military spending isn't really optional either. No wonder the federal government is described as an insurance company with an army. Yet the CBO's forecast looks actually too optimistic. It's assuming a rate of 3% in coming years. Right now, we know that they're paying on Treasury bills about 5.3%. Consider that around three-quarters of the Treasuries must be rolled over within 5 years. So there's a significant amount of Treasury debt out there that has a very short-term time to it, short time frame to it. Interest rates could fall in that time frame. We get that. That could be one thing that could change this dynamic or this metric. If you add just 1% to the average interest rate in the CBO's forecast and kept every other number unchanged, that would result in an additional $3.5 trillion in federal debt by 2033. The government's annual interest bill alone would then be about $2 trillion. For perspective, individual income taxes are set to bring in only $2.5 trillion this year. That's perhaps why Fitch said, you see this train, this oncoming train. Eventually, they're going to have to face reality in our federal government, including Congress. Mm. Now, I mentioned to both Heidi and Deanne here this morning that I heard an attorney mention on the TV yesterday, I won't mention her name, that she hated math. She's a well-known attorney judge. And I thought, you know, that's a great descriptor of many out there in the legal field. They're not mathematicians. That's why we may have some difficulty getting closer to a sane budget in Washington, D.C.
Too many lawyers?
yeah. That could be a problem. And too few economists and or business people.
Math majors.
Yes, that too. Just letting rates rise high enough to attract more and more of the world's savings might work for a while, but not without crushing the stock and housing markets because they're competing for that money. Too much money chasing too few goods. Or the Fed could step in and buy enough bonds to lower rates, which would rekindle inflation and depress real returns on bonds. So inflation comes up too much. So they're almost between a rock and a hard spot, wouldn't you say? Between trying to raise enough funds to manage the deficit, all of the locked-in spending versus the new programs that they're trying to do, such as windmillery. Dennis's word of the day.
Yeah.
Windmillery.
Or whatever it is.
The big fans.
The big fans. A harder to quantify complication of a future fiscal squeeze could be Washington's limited room, or would be rather Washington's limited room to maneuver as interest costs become uncomfortable. The ability to do things such as bail out banks, underwrite life-saving vaccines,
subsidize cutting-edge technologies, or even fight a war would be curtailed. And America with tight purse strings would be one with more volatile economy, diminished international prestige, and ultimately less attractive assets. Predicting, now this I think is a key sentence, predicting when markets get seriously concerned about that is hard. Impossible, some would say. Budget scolds have raised countless false alarms over the years. So the, you know, if you will, the raconteur, the opposite of that argument would be, they've been crying about this stupid deficit for, what, 20, 25, 30 years? Dennis, this is the same song and dance we've heard forever. Yeah. Until we can't hear it anymore. And our ability to repay it, or the confidence level declines to such a degree that, you know, they can't raise rates except to say, we need to raise taxes. And that famous old axiom, read my lips, no new taxes, would again be not followed. I know that's great grammar, isn't it? Thank you so much. The timing of the Fitch action was interesting, not making the grade by Northern Trust. Fitch downgraded her government debt 1 point from AAA, I think, to AA+. My memory serves properly. The decision cited a high and growing general government debt burden. Now, Northern Trust is a huge trust company. They're not somebody out in the weeds that you've never heard of. They're a huge, well-known trust company with a fairly high regard on Wall Street and other circles, just for perspective. And a steady deterioration in standards of governance over the last 20 years, including on fiscal and debt matters. So they're saying, listen, we have just a high level of irresponsibility in our federal government. While both issues are troubling, neither is novel. The debt ceiling debacle, which frustrated investors for weeks, was resolved 2 months ago with bipartisan support, thank goodness, right? However, fiscal discussions since then have shown the difficulty that America faces in dealing with its debt and deficit problems. The budgeting process is awkward. Broad outlines can be approved, but battles over the details can still end in stalemates. 12 major appropriation bills must be adopted for every year by September 30th. So 12 new appropriation bills, or 12 appropriation bills rather, have to be approved by September 30th. They're not coming back until September 12th. Most people would say that's about 2 weeks for them to make hay. September 12th is the next date both chambers are in session. A government shutdown at the beginning of October is looking more and more likely. No, we don't want Stuart Varney. Thank you. So it's interesting to note that we may be heading into some rough waters here on the government debt and the solutions thereof. Fitch tells the federal government, and this is in black, big black bold, if you will, to wake up. The credit downgrade shows the urgency of rethinking fiscal, regulatory, and monetary policy. They are going to have to get more serious as the regulatory agencies come in and say, listen, you're going to have to pay more and more interest because you're no longer AAA, which is partially what we're seeing. And I get clients kind of, when I mention T-bills, they need reassurance that the federal government is okay. Who would have ever thought we would have that conversation, right?
That comes up a lot, actually.
It does. So, I mean, the perspective of this is that encourage your Congress people to be perhaps more responsible with their spending and or cuts that they make, that they might make, as well as any supposed increases in taxes that we might see, given how low they are. That's probably going to be seen as easy pickings for them to raise revenue, to raise taxes. I probably shouldn't say that out loud. But it is that these articles of information, if you will, or these pieces here are written in the Wall Street Journal
And, you know, through Fitch, these are respected agencies that are not, of course, fly-by-nights. And I would just caution those who think that, you know, we can continue to operate without more responsibility. Mm-hmm. What's going on in the central bank sphere, if you will? Zoltan Pozsar on the global financial system's monetary divorce, he says here briefly, gold is definitely something that's coming back as a theme. We are seeing this more and more in the data that especially the countries that are not geopolitically aligned to the United States are shunning treasuries and shunning the dollar, and they're buying gold instead because that's one of the few assets they think they can trust because there is obviously so much of it made, and it is known as a currency still, a hedge against the worst in world government spending and or largesse, and a hedge to help maintain purchasing power in light of a possible falling currency, whatever currency that might mean to you, and of course for us, the U.S. dollar. So on that happy note, hurrah, hurrah.
Can I mention something, a little positive sign?
Sure, yes.
Congressman Bill Huizenga from Holland, Michigan, Republican, has teamed up with Congressman Scott Peters, a Democrat from California, for the Bipartisan Fiscal Forum. The group's mission is to sound the alarm about our nation's unsustainable debt trajectory and work together on solutions to regain control of our fiscal situations. They began to informally meet in 2020, and he mentions, like you did, the interest rates and how that's affecting our debt. So, as we've said before, there are a few adults in Congress that are trying to address this.
Well, I would hope that's great, Ron, and thank you. I would hope, too, is that the education wheel would start turning in terms of what this means, and that there has to be a connection between our economy's ability to fund our federal government and the federal government to stay within some kind of range of appropriate spending, given the economy's ability to cover it and people's ability to pay for it as we go. Now, obviously, government can borrow more than it needs to for certain purposes, but it needs to be able to have an ability to do that when things turn out particularly badly. So there has to be a connection there between our economy and between the government. And I think fundamentally, many in Washington, D.C. do not see or understand that connection. They don't get it. And that's my biggest concern about our, well, biggest concern? That's probably not. It's a significant concern of mine, to be sure. You know, our government's ability to continue, and excuse me, to maintain trust by both institutions and individuals because they're able to cover their debts into the future with their revenues. Relatively simple, right? I would hope.
Text messages.
Yes.
Comments. We seem to be reliving the roaring 20s. If Congress doesn't fix Social Security soon, the 2030s will make the Great Depression seem like it was a party.
Yeah, because the amount of debt that we have per individual and per our economy is much greater than it was in those days, by far. Yes.
This one, I don't know if you know, it says, weren't the bond ratings agencies like Fitch, Standard & Poor's, and Moody's wrong about everything leading up to the Great Recession? That would have been, what, 2008 leading up to that?
The answer to that is yes on the whole mortgage debacle.
Yeah.
I would say definitely yes.
And finally, someone said, given all this bad news about the debt, where are the investment opportunities?
Well, as Ray Dalio said, as he was quoted in that article, cash is pretty attractive right now. Ray Dalio, Bridgewater Associates, said early this year, reversing his previous opinion where he said cash was trash. So that is tending to be the theme, as we discussed last week. So bonds, high-quality bonds for interest rates, bigger company stocks, given their ability to withstand economic difficulties with these big companies are buying or investing in additional technology and all the rest to continue to grow, as well as even shorter-term debt, like we're seeing a lot of clients do, treasury bills. So having a broader array of investments that can give you a total return is relatively, it's somewhat easier these days, given how high interest rates are. So interest on short-term conservative money is really quite good as a simple solution to that question.
And it's so different from what we've been used to. Just as far back as just a couple years ago. I mean, trying to get a return off cash was tough.
Yeah, it was. It was about 1%. Less than that, maybe 0.75%. Now it's 5. Well, it's not rocket science, is it? Yeah. Oh, it's really something. Well, Heidi is talking today from the Social Security Advisor newsletter, August of 23. Proper planning and preparation prevent poor performance for Generation X.
That's a long title.
It is. Lots of P's.
Yeah, and this comes to us through the Ed Slott affiliation. And, so this was a very interesting article because it says, you know, we spend a lot of time here on the show talking about the baby boomers and the baby boomer generation. But, you know, the youngest baby boomers born in 1964 will be eligible for Social Security benefits in just 2026, just a few years down the line. And they'll also be eligible for Medicare benefits before the decade ends. So, hey, who's next? Let's start thinking about the people coming behind that. And that would be Generation X or the Gen Xers. And these are people who are born between 1965 and 1980. So they're around 43 to 58 years old. So they need to start thinking about their retirement readiness. And there's some shaky ground there. Some of the ramifications of the things that Dennis was talking about. They are going to have a unique set of financial challenges that is going to redefine on how to adequately plan for their retirements. So one thing that is also going to affect Social Security and its ability to pay out the benefits is recessions. We've had 3 recessions so far since the year 2000. In 2001, the 2007 to 2009, which we all remember, and 2020. And one reason why this is an important point is because when recessions happen, they reduce the workforce traditionally. And that means it reduces the number of people paying into Social Security, paying in so benefits can be paid out. So as we've talked about today, there are maybe some potential cutbacks of Social Security if we do not address some of these problems that we're facing that Dennis talked about.
Yeah, in some previous recessions, I recall that some people were retiring earlier because of the recession itself. And, you know, if you have the double whammy, if you will, of fewer paying in because they've lost their job, that can put the hurt on Social Security revenue.
That's right. And another pressure point is life expectancy. It has been increasing. Now, we did have a little pullback with COVID, but we do have that prospect of longer lasting, more expensive retirements with less support from Social Security. So we have to look at some proper planning. So first, let's take a closer look at what the baby boomers, some of their typical things that they have in their arsenal. These are the people born between 1946 and 1964. They have a lot of home ownership. They've been able to buy homes. It was very, it was something to be sought after for that generation is owning your own home. That was a big goal. So maybe not so much. Home prices are out of reach for a lot of people now. And so, you know, there are less home ownership in Generation X than there is in the baby boomer generation. Baby boomers also had a greater chance of maybe having a pension. Private pensions, private companies offering pensions has reduced dramatically over the years.
Yeah.
So, they're just not out there anymore. Companies just aren't offering them anymore. Whereas some of the older crowd, you know, they have the security of having that pension. There's also healthcare costs. Healthcare costs are rising dramatically over time. And so this is partly because there's such a big group of people who are aging right now. So what's typical with Generation X? Now, remember, this is the next group from 1965 through 1980, and we call this the sandwich generation. Hmm. And that's because you're caught between raising your children, supporting your children, but you're also maybe dealing with aging parents and being responsible for their care. So this generation tends to have a lower savings rate and a higher spending on debt. They have a higher debt service out there. More of this generation may have incurred student loans than those that are in the baby boomer generation. So another factor for Gen Xers is that they are less likely to stay with the same company. Now, I know my grandfather, he got a job. He stayed with the same company for like 40 years. That's not as typical anymore. People change jobs more often. They change locations. And that can impact how you build benefits through maybe company plans and opportunities. Okay, so it's not surprising. New York Life did a survey, and they found that Gen Xers have the highest level of anxiety and the lowest levels of hope compared to other generations, with 40% feeling not confident in their ability to meet their financial goals. So let's look at some of the pressing problems. We have the Social Security insolvency, where we know we're getting towards, you know, it's in the 2030s that where if nothing changes, they may have to reduce benefits. The pensions aren't as popular out there, and there's less opportunity to have a pension from your employer. And even though they have made, the legislation has made opportunities like 401k plans and other opportunities at employers, less people are participating in that, with only 55% of Gen Xers taking advantage of those kind of plans to plan for their retirement. We also have a new thing coming into play, and that's inflation. We all know over the last couple of years how inflation has increased dramatically. And of course, that is going to influence your ability to be able to provide for your basic expenses in retirement. So let's talk about, hey, okay, this is a lot of bad news. Now we've got everybody filled with anxiety out there, right? So let's turn the corner and say, okay, let's plan. Let's plan for the future. That's what we like to do, is plan. And so here are some tips for the Gen Xers. One is you want to focus on paying down and eventually paying off your high interest debt. That could be your credit cards, car loans. It could be your student loans. But you do want to focus in these years to getting those things off your plate so they don't go with you into retirement.
A great point perhaps might be listening to Dave Ramsey in terms of setting up the debt in some kind of a logical stream, if you will. In essence, they've got the term for it, but it's escaping me right now. They set the debt with at the lowest amount, the lowest debt that you have, pay whatever extra you can, and then once that particular debt is paid off, add that amount to the next one, setting aside interest rates. So that's a really interesting way to handle that. There are a lot of logical ways to pay down debt that can be extremely helpful. Dave Ramsey's got some great ideas on that.
I saw a meme or something the other day, and it said the universe shifted when somebody bought a Dave Ramsey book with a credit card.
What?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay, another
pay down debt.
Another hint is trim spending. So look at your budget. If you can trim spending, then maybe you can take advantage of some of those catch-up opportunities with retirement plans. Anyone who's over the age of 50 has an extra level of contribution that they can make. So that is for people over 50. So maybe you could trim some and put more into your retirement. You'll also want to plan for health care costs. If you have an HSA at your employer, this is something that can go with you into retirement and help you pay future medical bills. So you might want to take a look if you have an HSA. Are you funding it? Can you accelerate the funding of that? And I know what Dennis and I like about the HSA is not tax going in and not tax coming out if you use it right.
Correct. Yeah. What's interesting is it's still looking at what can you do with what you have. We've used that quote in years gone by. Now is no time to think of what you haven't done. Think of what you can do with what there is. So how do you pull that responsibility and or that opportunity back to you and say, oh, okay, I guess I can start thinking about how to handle this and manage it. I can get control of it. I just have to get started. And today is the best day to do that.
That's right.
You bet.
And doing that first step is usually the hardest thing. But make
That's
the
correct.
Call, make an appointment, start talking about these things because then you'll plan more. So also you want to maybe take a look at long-term care costs. You can maybe combine this with a life insurance policy, or there are some products that can provide some benefit for long-term care within a life insurance or annuity product. So maybe start checking those out. Also, Gen Xers are business owners. A lot of them are starting their own businesses or taking over their businesses from maybe the previous generation. Well, don't forget about your own retirement. Business owners tend to focus on investing in their business. But any business owner can have their own retirement plan. There are retirement plans out there, employer plans, for companies that only have the owner as the only employee. So those have higher limits, and you can put more into those retirement accounts.
So it's great to be aware of what you can do with what there is.
You could also, depending on what your career path and schedule is and family time, but work a few, one extra night a week somewhere and bring in a few extra bucks, put that toward your debt or toward your 401ks or whatever.
Open a Roth IRA.
Figure out a way to generate more revenue for yourself.
Exactly. You change two or three variables in your own mix, and it's amazing. And once you start that focus, we've seen it again and again. It's amazing how individuals and or couples can achieve their financial goals with just some focus on, okay, here's what you can do. Here's the difference it's going to make. Here are the adjustments you're going to need to make. And it's incredible what can happen. It really is.
It is. There's some opportunity out there, and you may want to shake things up a little bit in your investments and look at your diversification. Are there some products you should invest in that you haven't before? Because you're getting towards those years where you have to be more serious about planning for retirement. Now, there's a few points that deal with Social Security, some helpful hints. So one is, don't wait until you're going to retire to review your Social Security statement. Look at it now. Are your wages accurately reflected? If you, make sure everything was reported correctly, because there are mistakes where they may have a zero in a year where you actually did bring in income. So you want to make sure that those are accurate, and you look at those now. You also want to look at those. You see those numbers at the top of the form when you get a report that says, your Social Security is going to be X when you're a certain age. You may want to say, I'm going to plan on 80% of that. As we talk about these pressures on the Social Security and on the federal government, maybe take a more conservative view, like Dennis was saying, and pull that back a little bit in your retirement. Take a conservative number so that you have a buffer.
Yeah, exactly. And if that doesn't turn out to be the scenario that you're having to live through, then all the better for you. But if it is, then you're prepared. Of course, you bet. How are we doing on time here, Ron?
We've got a few minutes. We're going to wrap up.
All right.
I have one
Go
more.
Heidi.
One
awesome.
More.
Great.
So another thing is delaying Social Security claiming as long as it's practical. Assuming the current law remains in effect, waiting as long as possible to age 70 to claim Social Security increases the monthly Social Security benefit by 76% adjusted for inflation versus claiming at the earliest possible age, which is 62. 76%. That is a material percentage number.
That's about 9% a year difference. So that, you know, an incredible difference. And, of course, it's not just based on your benefits. What if your spouse would also claim on your benefits as well? You can make a huge difference for your spouse in his or her long-term income. And then if you were to pass away early, he or she then would get your greater benefit because you waited. So there's some other things to consider as a part of that, taking Social Security benefits later in life.
And that's assuming they stay stable, what they are now, and they're not cut.
Right. But even if they are cut, isn't that interesting? If you've waited, then your benefits would be cut by that same percentage amount, but your benefit would still be greater because you waited.
Yep.
All right.
So the Gen Xers can start planning.
They can. You betcha.
Yeah.
So we have some Lunch and Learns coming up. Medicare 101.
Medicare 101 with Don McConnell and Laverna Witkop from Ford Insurance.
You bet. Now that is September, thank you, Ron, September 20th. September 20th at our office from 12 to 1. There'll be a lunch served with that.
Hmm.
And we were talking at the break. I think we'll all be there ourselves.
Yeah.
Medicare 101, September 20th. Is that a Wednesday?
Yes.
Do we know that? All right. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, September 20th. If you would like to sign up for that, the phone number at the office, 231-947-3992, mm-hmm. or Melissa at proutfinancialdesign.com can help you out. Then October 18th, Roth IRAs. Learn about the benefits of the special type of tax advantage retirement account, discussing contributions, qualified and qualified tax-free withdrawals. Withdrawals. Thank you. I'm just correcting that spelling.
He's correcting our brochure.
Then, lastly, Know Your Tax Bracket with John Sluice, CPA. He is excited about teaching that. November 15th, taxes and retirement are tricky partners. It's important to know how to navigate this delicate dance. Now, he's got material all ready for it. John is ready. November 15th, why you want to know your tax, the importance of it, and the special benefits of having known that. How it can really help you in retirement. Conversation with a client yesterday who wanted to increase her monthly income. I said, well, we need to involve your accountant in this to make certain which account do we want to draw from, because in this particular situation, she had tax-free income available as well as taxable income, which is going to make the most sense, and or a combination of the two. That's where you can make a huge difference. Sometimes paying the tax at these low tax rates, given what we have currently, may be the best bet for you. Maybe. All right? So looking at the big picture. Next is Deanne. Talking about stats for the day.
Yes, absolutely. So we came across this article. It's entitled, The U.S. is Facing a Debt Storm. Here's five charts that show trouble is brewing. And it's by Jennifer Soar on the Business Insider. And again, we're just prefacing, we just want to make you aware of what economists and specialists are saying out there. We don't want to scare you at all. But basically, this article is about four factors why we could be facing a debt storm. Number one, private debt levels are rising at a staggering pace. Private debt levels are building fast and hit new records this year. Credit card debt just passed $1 trillion for the first time ever, according to Federal Reserve data. Personal unsecured loans also hit a new record, notching an unprecedented $225 billion in 2023, according to TransUnion. Ditto for corporate debt, which saw volumes grow 6.2% over the last year to hit $7.8 trillion, per Janice Henderson. Number two, corporate defaults are surging. Companies have begun to buckle under their debt burdens as rates rise, with the volume of defaults among U.S. companies in 2023 already surpassing last year's total. 55 U.S. firms defaulted on their debt in their first 6 months of the year, a 53% increase from the 36 companies that defaulted in 2022, and that's Moody's Investors Service data shows. And number three, late payments are piling up. People and companies are increasingly falling behind on their loan payments. In the commercial real estate sector, the percentage of commercial property owners that were late on payments for 30 days or more have already defaulted on their mortgage, which rose 3% in the first quarter, according to data Mortgage Bankers Association. And number four, banks want to dump risky debt. Banks are already trying to dump loans that have a greater risk of default, even if it means selling those assets at a discount. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Capital One are among those on Wall Street who are trying to get rid of the large commercial real estate assets, Bloomberg reported this week. Banks are also pulling back on debt dealing altogether as financial conditions tighten. That spells trouble for the commercial real estate industry, as there's around $1.5 trillion of commercial real estate debt that's set to reach maturity in the coming years and will need to be refinanced. So
those some are trouble
four
there.
Facts.
Oh, yeah. The commercial real estate debt burden is probably overdone right now, and we're due for some more correction. Now, what's interesting on the other side of that is many companies are raising funds, billions of dollars, to invest in this same commercial real estate because they're getting significant value discounts. There was an article, I think, in this weekend's Wall Street Journal about a property, I believe it was in San Francisco, that sold 8 to 10 years ago for, I think it was $120 million, and they snapped it up for $20 or $30 million here recently. So some significant discounts from previous valuations are occurring, and you've got people in there or companies in there buying those same assets. All right. So, next. Thank you, Deanne.
You're welcome. Well,
first of all, thank you.
Close to wrapping up time here.
You bet. Close to wrapping up time. There's a few more things, I think, to remember. Again, if you do want to sign up for our classes, call our office, 231-947-3992, or Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, at proutfinancialdesign.com, and you can sign up for our courses. Are they listed, too, on the website, Deanne?
Yes, they're on the website.
Prout Financial Design.
And I believe you can sign up on the website
as
well.
Yeah, there's a little button, a little link that you push, and that, well, you can just sign up that way.
Oh, great.
It's under the classes drop-down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
I'd love to see you there.
Sure would. You bet. You're welcome to come on by.
And if you missed any of this show, you can listen Saturday, the replay, 9 o'clock, WTCM.
Or on the podcast. Thanks, Ron.
Prout Financial Design. Thank you very much, Dennis, Heidi, and Deanne.